Chapter 4. "Looks good to me," I said as I flipped the light switch on and off a couple of times to check that it was working. "But let me know if you have more trouble with it."
"Thanks,"
Bert said in a grudging tone, but he smiled up at me from the couch.
"You take good care of that girl of yours. She's got a real wild look, but a heart of gold."
"I will, Mr. Tynor," I promised as I went over to shake the man's hand.
"You can call me Bert,"
the old guy replied and shook my hand. Ipsith and Judy came into the living room just then, and the elven woman hugged her hippie friend and waved goodbye to Bert before we left for home.
"Thank you for helping Mr. Tynor, my love,"
Ipsith said as she slipped her arm around mine. "It's not a big thing," I shrugged as we walked back home. "It turned out to be a little thing, and as long as it makes you happy, I'm happy."
"You make me happy, my wonderful king,"
the white-haired woman sighed and nuzzled her head against my shoulder. As we came up onto the front porch, I looked around at the grass and decided it was getting a little long. I still had a few hours of daylight left, so I figured I'd take care of it now, rather than later. "You go on in, baby," I said to my elven wife. "I'm going to mow real quick."
"As you like, my love,"
Ipsith replied as she opened the door.
"I will begin making supper."
I gave the blue-skinned woman an affectionate pat on the rear, and then headed around to the side yard, through the gate and into the backyard. Amrila was there practicing with her swords, and her bare feet lightly danced across the overgrown grass in almost hypnotic patterns. "Looking good, partner," I commented with a wink as I passed.
"Thanks, partner,"
the Zinkari woman smiled and blew a kiss before she went back to her forms. I went over to the shed and pulled out the mower as I mulled over my ongoing mental to-do list. I checked the gas and then topped it off. And all the while I thought about perhaps the biggest item on said list, finding evidence of the Night Elf chief Ursinger's treachery to bring to the other tribes. Once Ursinger was removed from power, I could breathe easier, knowing he wasn't somewhere under my feet plotting against my family. I knew the evidence I was looking for was probably hidden away in a hunting retreat that Ursinger went to with his generals, but I didn't know how well guarded the manor house might be. I just had a general idea of where it was in the gloom. So as I drove the mower past the horned woman, I stopped and leaned on the steering wheel with a thoughtful expression. "I was thinking about us going back to the gloom soon," I said quietly so Mrs. Whitmire, the nosy old lady next door, couldn't overhear if she was in her backyard.
"There's a lot to do down there,"
Amrila nodded, and she paused her exercise.
"What did you have in mind?"
The Zinkari woman had worked up a slight sweat, and I was momentarily distracted by a bead of moisture that ran down her graceful neck and down her chest to disappear into the collar of her damp t-shirt. I cleared my throat and shook my head as I brought my mind back to focus. "Well, we know where the retreat is, approximately, but we don't know what it might be like outside or inside. We'll either have to force our way in or sneak in quietly. But either way, I think we'll do better with some help. Do you think Scourge would be up to the task?"
"If it involves fucking over the Mad Chief, then Scourge will help."
Amrila grinned as she sheathed one of her swords and wiped her forehead.
"What about the Dolrath Princess? She is a very capable fighter, and I think she's a little sweet on you. I bet she would help us."
"Nylame?" I said as I blushed a little. "Sure, she might help. You think she's sweet on me?"
"Oh, please."
The Zinkari chuckled.
"Her eyes followed you everywhere while we were in her mother's meeting hall. Why do you think I gave her that old rifle? I was helping to reel her in for you."
"What?" I choked. "I mean, I know you're okay with Ipsith, and Ipsith is cool with however many women I might be with because of her culture. But you were being my wingman? You're fine with me having more wives than just you and Ipsith?"
"Have as many wives as you'd like."
Amrila shrugged before she sheathed her other sword and sauntered up to me with a smirk.
"No other woman can give you what I can, and you can have children with many women. I have no reason to feel jealous."
As if to prove her point, my half-demon lover then took a handful of my shirt and pulled me to her for a long, deep kiss. "You're right about that," I said once we pulled away, and smiled down at my Zinkari wife. "And I do think Nylame would be useful to have along."
"Then that is our plan,"
the black-eyed woman replied.
"Scourge and I can handle quiet infiltration, if that is what's called for, and you and Nylame can kill anything that gets in our ways with your rifles."
"Sounds good to me." I nodded and then gestured to the mower. "But for right now, I'll go start in the front yard so you can finish up your practice."
"Thank you, partner,"
Amrila said, and we kissed again before I started the mower and drove it to the front yard. I hopped off and opened the side yard gate, and I rode the mower through to the front. Then I took my time as I steered the riding mower in steady lines back and forth along the lawn. The front yard wasn't very big, but I took my time. The act of mowing was meditative on a riding mower, and I loved the satisfaction of looking at straight, symmetrical lines when it was all over. As I turned the mower to cut back across the yard, I happened to look up and see Tanya Daniels coming across the cul-de-sac right at me. Today, the middle-aged waitress had on a leopard print, racer-back tank top over some very tight skinny jeans. I'd admit, waiting tables had helped the woman keep her figure, but there was something about the woman's brash personality that a tight ass and a decent rack just couldn't make up for. Tanya's bleached blonde hair was thrown up in a messy bun, and she wore a deep taupe-colored lipstick that didn't quite suit her. When it was abundantly clear she was coming over to talk to me, I politely stopped the mower and waited. "Afternoon, Tanya," I said as she stepped onto the lawn and made her way toward me.
"Hey, Eddie,"
the blonde woman said in a kittenish tone.
"Lovely day, isn't it?"
"Yeah," I agreed, and I looked around at the clear sky that was starting to turn pink as the sun dipped toward the horizon. "I guess we should enjoy them while we can. What can I do for you?"
"Well,"
the gaudy woman said as her hand went up to play with her hair.
"I hate to ask, but I was wondering if you could come over sometime and look at my dryer. I hear you're a bit of a handyman."
Something about the way Tanya said handyman sent a little red flag up in my head. "Oh, well, I'm no professional," I started but was soon cut off.
"It sucks not having a man in your life,"
the blonde continued with a casual wave of her manicured hand.
"But the damn thing just doesn't generate any heat."
In the past, I'd been notorious for being oblivious when women flirted with me, but there was very little subtlety to Tanya. The heavy perfume the cougar wore had started to waft over to me, and the potency of the musky scent was almost enough to make me cough. There was also no mistaking the emphasis the middle-aged woman put on the words man and heat. I was definitely not attracted to her, but all the same, I didn't want to be rude or unneighborly. I thought about helping Tanya with her dryer, if it was indeed broken, but I didn't want to give her the chance to corner me either.
I don't really know much about dryers," I lied.
"But maybe my wife could give you the name of the guy who fixed ours."
"Oh,"
Tanya said with a look of surprise.
"Is she your wife? The girl with the blue body paint? When I saw that other girl who likes to dress like an emo demon, I just assumed you were collecting girlfriends, and I wondered when I'd get an invitation."
The waitress laughed as if she were joking, but she also watched my reaction very closely, so I knew the only way out of this was to play dumb. Tanya had clearly been watching the ladies and I very closely, and it seemed like she wanted to join in. But as long as she stuck to hints, I had plausible deniability and could act as if I just wasn't picking up what she was trying to lay down. "Yeah," I smiled and played up the whole "I'm just a country boy" thing. Ibsith moved in, and her friend Amrila just kind of came along with her. Guess I'm a lucky man. It's like the old show Three's Company.
"Could be four,"
Tanya purred as she gave me a direct look. I stammered and tried to think of an out in a panic, but then my phone started ringing, and I breathed an inward sigh of relief as I pulled my cell out of my pocket and looked at the screen. "Sorry," I said quickly and tried to sound sincere. "It's my lawyer. I really should take this."
"Aww,"
Tanya said as a slight pout crossed her face.
"Okay, I guess you'll get me that number for the handyman when you can."
"Will do. Bye, Tanya," I replied as I hit the answer button and held the phone up to my face. "Hello?"
"Good evening, Mr. Hill,"
Travis's cool, professional voice responded over the line.
"How you doing?"
"A lot better now," I said as I watched the bleached blonde wiggle her way back across the cul-de-sac. "You've got impeccable timing."
"So I've been told,"
Meyer said dryly.
"I was just calling to let you know I've started processing the money from the sale of your goods, and I've prepared your funds for the offer on the house you wanted. There's $200,000 available to you when you need it."
"That's great, Meyer," I said as I headed for the front door, since I didn't want to discuss my finances on the front lawn. and then I stepped through the front door and saw Ibsith standing in the kitchen preparing dinner. But I actually might need a little more than that.
Oh?
The lawyer asked in a mild tone.
Did the owner ask for more money? Because I feel your offer's quite reasonable, given the current property values of the area.
You know the going property values for Westhurst? I chuckled as I stood next to the doorway to avoid tracking dirt into the house.
I had my assistant do some research.
Actually, it's not the owner that's the problem. I scoffed. It's this one neighbor, Brock Stanton. He heard I made an offer and tried to outbid me.
What a dick!
Travis commented with uncharacteristic snark.
Well, I can get more funds ready in the event of a bidding war, but if I'm being honest, anything over $300,000 would be too much for the property. I'd recommend leaning into the advantage you have with liquid funds. You could give them the money tomorrow if needed.
That's kind of what I told the owner. I said, from what I can tell, Brock can probably get the money, but I'm sort of banking on him not being able to get it as fast as I can.
Well, just have to hope this Brock isn't dumb enough to pay well over market value to outbid you. I can also draw up some paperwork and bring it to you, so you can make a firm offer and have the owner sign an agreement. That way things will be locked in.
Yeah, I nodded. Sounds good, Meyer. Thank you.
Have a good evening, Mr. Hill,
the lawyer replied. After a quick goodbye, Travis and I got off the phone, and I went back out to finish up mowing. Then I put away the mower, went back into the trailer, and got cleaned up before sitting down to dinner with my beautiful wives. Once we were full, we watched a couple episodes of a new sitcom that the ladies had started to get into, and I had to admit, it was another perfect evening. The next day, I wanted to go out and get some supplies ahead of Amreel and I going back to the Gloom, so after breakfast, I grabbed my wallet and keys and looked at the ladies as they finished their coffees on the couch. Ibsith was wearing my favorite of her dresses. It was a little white lace number that showed off her curvy figure in all the best ways. The low-cut neckline somehow contained her ample cleavage, and sometimes when she turned just the right way, I could see the bottom of her ass cheeks. Meanwhile, Amreela had on a black romper with a little skull embroidered on the left leg of the shorts. She was comfortably lounging as she sipped her coffee. I got some errands to run, I said. But I thought since you have a license now, maybe you'd like to drive, Ibsith.
Oh, yes, please.
The blue-skinned woman clapped her hands together and giggled. You want to come along, Amreela? I asked the Zinkari with a sly smile.
No, I'm fine here.
The horned woman hedged.
I want to practice my reading with the novel I got the other day.
You sure? I pressed while trying not to laugh.
Very sure.
The Zinkari woman replied as she leveled her gaze at me. The truth was, Ibsith wasn't very good at driving yet, and Amreela hated riding in the truck when Ibsith had practiced before we got the Rubicon. All right. I grinned before I turned to my first wife. You ready to go, baby?
I am ready.
Ibsith cheered as she got up and slipped on her shoes. In the meantime, I went over to the couch and kissed the horned woman.
Don't die,
she whispered to me while my face was close to hers. She's not that bad of a driver. I laughed under my breath. The Zinkari woman gave me a skeptical look, and I struggled to rein in my smile. It was funny to me that Amreel and I regularly found ourselves in life-or-death situations, like fighting the bat-like Nyctors or a shadow demon that was immune to regular bullets. But riding in a car with Ibsith driving was what the red-skinned woman was most worried about. Outside, Ibsith sprinted to the driver's side, and I got into the passenger side, where I securely buckled myself in. The elven woman adjusted the seat, steering wheel, and mirrors as she tried to remember all the things I'd taught her about safety, and given her small stature, the elf had to move the driver's seat forward to an almost comical point to be able to comfortably reach the pedals. Once everything was adjusted, Ibsith put the gear shift in reverse and glanced up at the rearview mirror as she let up on the brake and then pressed on the gas. The Rubicon suddenly leaped backwards, which caused me to grab the dashboard in front of me as I was thrown forward. The blue-skinned woman squealed and hit the brakes suddenly, and my seatbelt snapped back painfully as we came to a stop again.
Oh, no!
The white-haired woman gasped.
I'm so sorry, my love!
No, I coughed as I readjusted my seatbelt. I should have warned you this new vehicle was going to be a lot more responsive than the truck. Just take it easy and go slowly until you get used to how the Jeep handles.
Okay,
Ibsith replied,
and I saw she was blushing slightly with embarrassment. This time, my wife was more cautious, and we rolled back smoothly as she pulled out of the cul-de-sac. As we drove toward the center of town, there were a couple of hard stops and one or two dicey turns, but Ibsith was trying very hard to learn, so I was patient and gentle with my instructions. Our first stop was at Nathan's Army Surplus and Arms. The owner, Nathan, was an eccentric man with only one arm who seemed to spend a lot of time thinking up new and creative displays for his wares. But he wasn't a bad guy. As Ibsith and I stepped into the store, the chime announced our presences, and I noticed one of the table displays had been changed. The table was still covered in various types of gas masks, but the mannequin was positioned into a dramatic pose, with one hand over its heart and the other held out in front of it. The mannequin wore one of the gas masks, and in the outstretched hand there was a gas mask with the face pointed back at the mannequin, like something out of a Shakespeare play. Nathan came out of the back room somewhere at the sound of the door chime and smiled when he saw me. The man looked as rumpled as ever with his sandy hair still uncombed, and he was wearing a faded white t-shirt under an open Hawaiian shirt that was surprisingly festive.
"Eddie!" Nathan greeted me in a jovial tone. "And who's this beautiful lady with you?"
"This is Ibsith, my wife," I replied, and I looked over and saw the elven woman smile in acknowledgement of the compliment.
"Wife?"
the gruff shop owner asked as his eyebrows went up a little. Last time I'd come to the shop, Amrila had been with me. I could tell the disheveled man was curious about it, but Nathan was a businessman in his own way, so when I just nodded, he didn't press the issue.
"It's lovely to meet you, Mrs. Hill,"
the shop owner said pleasantly.
"It is nice to meet you too,"
Ibsith replied in a sweet tone.
"If I remember correctly," Nathan said as he turned back to me. "How's it going with the new gear? I remember you got that red dot last time you were here."
"Yeah, it worked awesome," I said.
"Good,"
he laughed.
"I got this surefire laser and flashlight combo. I thought you might be interested in it last time. You want it now?"
"You remember?" I asked as the elven woman and I walked up to the counter.
"Sure,"
Nathan grunted as he made an expansive gesture with his one hand.
"You're my best customer. Hell, in the short time I've known you, you've spent more money here than some of my regulars do in a year, if it's not crass of me to say so."
The scruffy man chuckled to himself, and then he dipped under the counter and came back up with a smallish box that said Surefire Weapon Light on the side. "I've never used a laser before," I replied as Nathan handed me the box. "How does using it differ from the red dot?"
"This is a laser add flashlight combo,"
the sandy-haired man explained as he leaned against the countertop.
"Lasers are good for things a little closer up, say within 25 yards or so. If you turn and see a target you want to acquire quickly, rather than having to sight it, you get your laser on it. Good to go, you can also kind of aim the weapon around a corner without getting your face behind it."
"That would be really useful," I said as I thought about all the times in the gloom I could have used something like that. My experience with guns before the last few months was all from hunting with my dad. Shooting in combat was still kinda new to me. I'd done well so far, but this would certainly up my game.
"Go ahead and open the box so we can have a look,"
Nathan smiled as he looked at the pleased expression on my face.
"This mounts onto the bottom of the rail, right near the front of the rifle. There's also independent buttons for the flashlight and laser that you'll be able to turn on and off without having to take your hand off your weapon."
"Nice." I nodded as I took the small black flashlight out of its box and looked it over. Ibsith had been listening politely while I talked to Nathan, but guns were not of much interest to her, so she started to wander around the store while I clicked the light and laser on and off to see how it worked.
"If you don't mind me saying,"
the shopkeeper said as he leaned in and whispered in a conspiratorial tone,
"that wife of yours is something. What about the girl you were with last time you were here? The red-skinned one?"
We kind of are also together."
"Damn!"
Nathan chuckled softly.
"You're a lucky dog. I can't believe it. The red one was the prettiest creature I'd ever seen until you brought this one in."
"Thanks," I snorted. "She can cook, too."
"Really?"
Nathan sounded impressed.
"Where do you even find women like that?"
The sandy-haired man looked at Ibsith appreciatively before respectfully peeling his eyes away, and I grinned.
If only I could tell the man that you can only find women like Ibsith and Amrila if your grandpa leaves you an old trailer with access to an underground fantasy world in your backyard. You just have to go to those conventions they have over in Cleveland. I lied smoothly. Comic books, anime, trading card games. Ladies have really started getting into that stuff.
Huh?
Nathan nodded his head.
Might have to check that out. How do you like the laser? This one goes for about $900, but it's top of the line and made in the USA. Going to be plenty durable.
I'll take it, I decided, as I put the light back into its box. And I'd like to get 2 boxes of ammo for the Galil and the Glock 17. Wait, make that 4 boxes of ammo for the AK. I was going to see Nilame, and I thought some extra ammo would be a nice gift for her. Maybe I'd give her my spare set of Pro-X ear protection, too, since I was going to ask her to help me raid Ursinger's retreat.
No problem.
Nathan grinned, and he was clearly pleased with himself for having anticipated his customer's needs.
Anything else?
Maybe some of those silicone earplugs? I said as I thought out loud, like a big bag of them.
Headphones make for better protection.
The sandy-haired man argued in a cautioning tone.
Don't I know it?
I laughed. But I can keep the little earplugs in my pocket for emergencies.
Fair enough,
Nathan said as he stepped away to gather up my items for me. The rumpled shop owner got everything rung up, I paid for the lot, and then Ibsith and I said goodbye to Nathan. I couldn't wait to try out the laser on my Galil, but I thought Ibsith and I could spend some more time out first. I was going to go back to the Gloom soon, and it was hard to say how long I would have to be down there this time, so I had Ibsith drive us to the town square, where there were some small boutiques and specialty stores along the main drag. I only grabbed the door once or twice, as my wife hit the brakes too early, or not early enough for my comfort, as she navigated her way through traffic. But we found parking, and were able to enjoy the afternoon walking around and browsing the different shops. At one kinda crunchy, all-organic store, I found some really nice tea that came in fancy-looking tins I thought Scourge might like. The half-demon man seemed to really like his tea, and if I was gonna ask a favor of him, it was a nice gesture. I also picked up some upscale candy for my customary gift to the brownies, who were little rat-like people that inhabited the great forest. Meanwhile, Ibsith found some herbs and spices that reminded her of ones from the Gloom, so we stocked up on those and then continued our walk up and down the main street. We looked through the windows of different shops and held hands, and it was a very pleasant way to spend an afternoon at the tail end of summer. I wanted to get something for the dwarves, too, since they'd helped me by making the magical bullets I'd used to kill the shadow demon in the Dolrath territory. But I was going to wait to get their gift until we were on the way home. I knew a little drive-through that carried craft beer, and I thought it would be a nice treat for them. It might even help the gruff Dorim warm up to me. When we got back to the car, I gently insisted on driving home, and Ibsith was so content from the outing she didn't argue. We made a quick stop for beer, both for us and the dwarves, and then the blue-skinned woman and I decided to pick up some food and head home.
Hey, partner, I called into the trailer as we came through the front door. We're home.
And we have food and beer.
Ibsith giggled as she followed me inside. I set all of the shopping down to one side, as Ibsith took the Chinese food we'd gotten to the kitchen and started to get plates.
I do love beer.
The red-skinned woman sheered as she came out of the still-steaming bathroom with wet hair. The three of us piled our plates with wontons, soft dumplings, and General Tso's, which was Amrila's personal favorite. Then the ladies and I sat on the couch to watch some TV, enjoy dinner together, and drink some cold beers. After a few hours of hanging out in a pile on the couch, Amrila got up and stretched.
I think I'm going to call it a night.
She sighed as she reached her arms over her head, and I couldn't help but notice her little romper hugged her lithe body.
Good night, sweet sister,
Ibsith replied in a soft tone. Night, partner. I smiled and winked at her.
Night, husband.
As the Zenkari woman padded off to her room for the night, Ibsith got up and started to gather dishes and empty beer cans. And I watched my elven wife's graceful movements as she fussed over the house. It was one of the ways she showed love to Amrila and me, by taking care of the little things for us. But then, as she turned to go into the kitchen to deposit the plates in the sink, the skirt of her little white dress came up slightly, and I caught a glimpse of her smooth, round ass cheeks. I felt a desire stir deep within me, and my blood started to rise. There was something in the way the elven woman's hips swayed as she walked that never ceased to get me going. I stood up and crossed the living room floor to follow her, and as she reached the sink and set the dishes down, I wrapped my large hands around her small waist. You're so beautiful. I rumbled as I pressed my face against her soft neck, and my hands were already slowly lifting up her short skirt. I need to fuck you.